The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app, which is free to download, by the way. Or possibly you're watching us on Channel 1301 on your cable dial here in Pittsfield. Glad that you're along for the ride this morning. It's the 10th of July this morning. We're live and local this morning in our WTBR studio. We have Rose Wessel this morning. She's from Berkshire Environmental Action Team and the program coordinator of No Fracked Gas in Mass. And we're going to talk about environmental issues today, about pipelines and fish stocking. Do fish wear stockings? I don't know. We'll find that out.
The jokes are endless.
and other environmental issues on the program this morning. Looking forward to that discussion. First, let's get to our weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly cloudy. Near steady temperature in the mid-60s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy. Humid with highs around 80. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Lows in the upper 50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, not too bad of a forecast. I'm looking outside. It was bright sunny just a minute ago, and it looks like it has clouded over just a bit. But we're going to have a nice weekend. I'm not hearing about any rain or big thunderstorms, and somewhat in the mid-80s, which is kind of nice. I was also hearing that we are going to get some more heat sometime in the mid-week of next week. So we'll see how that all goes. But enjoy the weekend. We don't always get a nice weekend where we got two solid days of good weather. So we'll take that any day.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And it's been a while, Rose, since you've been on the show with me. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Always good to catch up on what's going on in the environmental front here in Berkshire County and around the state and around the region. And so you always bring me some interesting tidbits here of things I didn't know that were going on. So I'd like to know more about the Constitution Pipeline. That was something that I feel like we've been here before. It's a bit of deja vu.
Oh, it's total deja vu, but it's coming back as a little bit more of a nightmare. Mm. So Constitution Pipeline is one of those big gas transmission lines, kind of like the Ned one that we were facing 14 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like it's been a while.
Yeah, and it was around at the same time. It's not directly here, but it does have downstream impacts that could affect us. So
where is it actually, and what does it do, Constitution Pipeline?
It runs from the fracking fields in Pennsylvania. You can see on the map that it starts right where all those gathering lines are. So it's right in the middle of where they're extracting. And it runs through upstate New York to just west of Albany. Hmm. And there's a big gas hub there where several pipelines connect.
Hmm. What town is that in, or what area is that
in? It's in Wright, New York. Hmm. And it's the town has another name. It's kind of like one of those, is it Northampton or is it Leeds?
Right, right.
You know, one of those kinds of things. So.
New York has that weird thing where they have like the villages and then they have sort of the established town. But then there are multiple other villages around that are all connected to the same town.
Yeah, and county government counts for a lot more than it does here. Yeah. So, it's structured a little bit differently, but it's Wright, W-R-I-G-T-I. Oh, my God. I-G-H-T. Too early in the morning to spell that one. But it's 125 miles of pipeline, and it connects to Tennessee gas lines on both ends. Mm. So those both push into New England. Mm.
It's so also Tennessee gas lines mean Tennessee. It's a company.
Yeah, Tennessee Gas. And folks know it here. That's where Berkshire Gas gets its gas. Mm. It runs. See, there's a lateral from Tennessee Gas that runs all the way up through Berkshire County as well, sort of a sidearm of that pipeline. Okay. So that's our main gas supplier for Western Mass. It also connects to, they keep appropriating tribe names, but the Iroquois pipeline, which goes down through upstate New York, swings into Connecticut, and that supplies another appropriated name, Algonquin pipeline system that Enbridge owns. And that comes up through Connecticut and into eastern Massachusetts.
Okay.
So there are several connections that push the gas to New England. And that's one of the stated purposes of this pipeline is to supply gas to New England. It would bring 650,000 decatherms a day. That's enough energy to provide heat to 3 million homes or about 2.5 to 3 gigawatts of power continuously for data centers.
So is that the real push here to build this new pipeline section? Is that the data centers are hungry for power and for generation?
We don't know officially because unlike all the other pipeline proposals before, this one is not claiming any customers. They don't have any firm contracts and they should not be able to apply without that.
So they're prospecting.
Basically. And if you see their map, it's sort of a cartoon map of the pipeline, and it just has a whole bunch of arrows popping off at the end, like it's spouting out at the end of the pipeline. And the gas all points to us. It doesn't go in all directions. So it could fuel data centers along the Route 88 corridor in New York. And the folks there are bracing for that as a possible use.
And the Route 88 is that connection between, what, Albany and Binghamton, that area?
I think so,
That southeastern part of upstate New York.
Yep, through the Capital Region down from there. So it was originally proposed. Now, this is what we call a zombie pipeline. If you see us out tabling, we have a board that says zombie pipelines because they all come back at some time or another. This one's coming back in a big way. It was originally proposed in 2012. And it got its certificate from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. That's the big one. It gives them eminent domain and all that stuff.
And they can't do anything without that approval.
Right. They can't do anything at all. But it was stopped by denial of a water quality certificate from New York. They said, you're going to impact too many waterways. You can't build this. And that was in 2016. And they went ahead and gave them a waiver. FERC gave them a waiver.
Recently?
No. This is back in 2016.
Okay.
Gave them a waiver for the New York certificate, and a whole bunch of people sued them and said, you can't do that. And it went into appeals court, and it was the second circuit court in New York upheld that water quality certificate denial and ordered FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to vacate all of the dockets, clear them out as if this never happened, this should not exist, clear them out.
So basically, at that point, then, this should be a done deal. This is old news.
Yep.
It was already decided. Everything's been litigated, and it's dead and gone.
Yep.
In 12 years ago.
And if they wanted to come back, they would have to repropose and start all over again. And there's a long process. There's public input. There's scoping hearings. There's environmental review hearings and a whole bunch of stuff that they would have to do all over again. Well, it was reproposed in January of 2025.
Now, what else happened in January 2025?
Who issued all those executive orders around that time, too? So an energy emergency was declared by the administration, and it was really surreal to hear him say, and we're going to revive the Constitution pipeline. Said it right on air. And he said, we're going to do it in a year, and found out that nothing happens in a year, even no matter who you are. It just doesn't happen that way. But what's happening now is FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, allowed them to keep that docket. They didn't vacate the docket. All that stuff was still sitting there on their computers. And Constitution Pipeline Company it's owned by Williams Company, but it's called Constitution Pipeline, Inc. They are applying for a simple reissuance of that previous certificate and the waiver to the New York water quality certificate. So that's what they're asking for. And FERC is kind of going along with it. They're like, they were actually called out by the New York Attorney General saying, you can't do this on this docket. You have to start from scratch. They're like, no, we have discretion over how we use our own dockets. Thank you. And there's now lawsuits going on about all that.
So now it's become a struggle of the federal government and administration versus the state authority, at least in New York State. Now, just get back just a bit here. So there are pipelines already bringing this gas from Pennsylvania through New York into New England, right?
Yep.
So this is what, adding capacity? This is a new, does it go alongside existing pipelines? Is it going to through new territory? What makes it different and why is it a problem?
It's a brand new supply, so it adds that 650,000 decatherms to the existing supply.
Okay.
So it is a big increase in supply. And it's what they call a greenfields pipeline. And it's going through new territory.
Okay.
There's nothing that it, but it does connect to Tennessee Gas on both ends and Iroquois at the top, which also connects to Enbridge, which brings it along the southern part of New England.
Yep.
So it basically starts where they're drilling and shunts that gas up to the hub that all the others hook up to.
Now, some of that also, do you think, intended not only for the data centers that we talked about earlier, but also potentially for export? Because it seems like that's been a shift of sort of American energy policy recently, is to say, well, there's so much natural gas in these frack fields and in other places in America that we can basically become a supplier to the world, sending it to Europe. A lot of that was around the time of the start of the Ukraine war, for example, where Europe couldn't get their gas from Russia anymore.
Yep.
And then they were going to go freezing over the winter. So now they put it on tankers and they get it over to Europe from here. But they need a way, right, to get it from the inside of the country out to the ports.
That was definitely the case in 2014.
Yeah.
So when Constitution was proposed, there came the NED project. The same owners of Tennessee Gas also would have proposed this. That's Kinder Morgan. That was that large transmission line that would have hooked up to that Wright interconnect and taken it through Massachusetts up through New Hampshire. And it would have connected in Draycott out in the eastern part of the state to the Maritimes and Northeast that would have brought it up to Canada. Why export out of Canada? Because of the Jones Act. So it's much easier to ship to American ports from another country. So there were a whole bunch of...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So we'd actually bring it through U.S. states up to Canada so we could bring it back to the U.S.? Did I get that right?
You have the option, yeah. But the biggest markets were still in Europe. Europe was paying about 3 to 5 times as much as domestic markets, and Asia was paying around 4, 5, or 6 times as much at that point. So that was the big push. There were a whole bunch of LNG export terminals proposed for Nova Scotia at that time. And when the NED pipeline died, those didn't get built. So that's the big connection. But the other connection is that when Constitution was proposed, that made all these other expansions possible. That's when they expanded the Tennessee Gas Line through Otis State Forest. They proposed NED, and that's also
There were a lot of protests about that here in Berkshire County.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was giving away state land for expanding. That was expansion of an existing system. NED would have been another greenfields pipeline through new territory. But the other thing that happened was Enbridge had several proposals as well. Out in the eastern part of the state, there was some greenfields pipeline and then expansion of the existing at that time as well.
So is part of the problem with constructing new pipelines the fact that what it does is it puts the infrastructure in for years and decades to come, so that once it is sort of like the Field of Dreams problem, if you build it, they will come and they will continue to come, right? So no matter what, if that infrastructure is there, people will still use fossil fuels rather than transitioning over to renewable fuels that we know is kind of like the future of energy, right? But if you got that crutch where you can rely on that for 50 years, 100 years, you'll keep doing that.
Exactly, exactly. And it allows, new businesses to say, hey, look, I can develop this and I can use gas because there's this big gas thing here. Although we have increased the amount of gas coming into Massachusetts significantly. I think it's 50% since 2014. Has the price of gas gone down for anyone? Natural gas?
Doesn't seem that way.
How's your heating bill looking?
Yeah. Actually, you know, strangely enough, me personally, I feel like the electric bill is the thing that's gone crazy.
That's a whole other ball of wax.
You know?
And that's happening nationwide. We tend to think it's just us, but it's actually happening nationwide. And that's a whole other ball of wax we could go into for an hour just on its own. But basically, they make money by building out their infrastructure. That's their big guaranteed rate of return. And then they charge the customers for it. Yeah. And it works the same for pipelines.
Well, of course, we've seen a lot of sort of improvement and reworking of a lot of the underground infrastructure for natural gas right here in Pittsfield and throughout Berkshire County. You know, what's your feeling on that? Because it seems like it's necessary to at least promote safety of that, right? You don't want a 100-year-old gas line leaking and potentially causing, you know, some catastrophic problems. We've seen those on the news, and you know, you want them to maintain the lines, but at the same time, as they're maintaining the lines, right, that means that they'll be used for another 50 or 100 years.
Yeah, that's the GSEP program. That stands for Gas System Enhancement Plan. And the original plan for that was to take care of the worst leaks. It was supposed to, it was mandated that they had to go in and fix the leaks. It was bad enough before that was done that they actually held a disco party for one leak that had been around since the 70s. And they were playing Bee Gees and everything and having a disco party because that leak had been monitored and there since the 70s. So at first it was a great idea that they were mandated to fix the leaks. But what happened because of that guaranteed rate of return on infrastructure building, they started expanding it and saying, well, while we're here fixing the leaks, we can just redo this whole section. And it turned into bigger and bigger projects. And if they get 14% rate of return, that's a nice little profit. And it started expanding into replacing the entire system.
So in a lot of ways, what you're paying for in your gas bill isn't necessarily the gas or the delivery of the gas, but it's
usually
maintaining that infrastructure.
Yeah, a lot of it is the infrastructure. All the delivery fees and stuff like that, as opposed to the units of gas that you use. That's, and same with the electricity, too. Delivery fees are what's really spiking, and that's paying them to, you know, put things on taller poles, do a lot of tree cutting, even though the trees aren't anywhere near because they raise the lines. They're doing both, and they make a pretty penny for it, and we all pay for it.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of pole replacement and things like that recently, and you know, I tend to think of that as a good thing. I don't know how long the poles have been there. And you know, you see them with, you know, those braces on them and things, thinking, okay, well, that means probably that the bottom of it has rotted out and the thing could fall over at any moment.
And it's the same sort of thing, you know, like they should fix gas leaks, definitely, but they take that opportunity to do a whole string of things that didn't need to be done.
Now, Rose Wessel, my guest here, if you're just joining us on Morning Drive, she is the program coordinator of No Fracked Gas in Mass, and that is a program of BEAT, which is Berkshire Environmental Action Team. And we're talking about, started talking about the Constitution Pipeline, kind of meandered away from that a little bit. But that again, is something. Now, how do you feel, and I think we've talked about this before, natural gas is a lot of times talked about as a transitional fuel, right, of getting us away from the dirtier ways that we use, you know, I think of diesel fuel or oil or coal, things like that, where natural gas is a fossil fuel, but it is a cleaner way of keeping our energy needs satisfied while we transition over and work on the more renewable, you know, the solar and the wind and geothermal and all the other things that are coming up. But it seems like now with this administration, the brakes have been put on that other stuff completely, and they want to revert us to maybe even some of the older, dirtier fuels again. And where does that leave natural gas?
Right now, it's favored quite heavily by the administration. So, we're fighting hard to not go backwards. They called natural gas the bridge fuel. You know, back when most things were coal or oil, that was true for a brief while, but that's about 20 years ago. Mm. And, you know, we've crossed the bridge. We need to get off the bridge. Mm-hmm. And right now we're sort of standing on the bridge and starting to walk back to the other end. So,
well, certainly, you know, looking at what's happening with the Iran war, for example, and the impacts that that's having worldwide on energy supply and on the economy and supply lines and all kinds of other things that are sort of the underpinnings of modern society, you know, the one waterway, the Strait of Hormuz that controls everything. It does seem like the world is adjusting to that in some ways. Maybe not the ways that would make the most sense.
Yeah.
You know, again, China has obviously invested a lot in renewable energy, and they saw some of this coming. And I think there are some places in the United States, even the places you wouldn't expect, like Texas, has put a lot of investment into wind, right, and into solar to sort of prop up their grid and their usage. So why aren't we doing more of that?
You know, I don't know, because the one thing that's really shifted in the last 5 or 8 years now is renewables are actually cheaper than fossil fuels.
Which is a huge inflection point, right?
Yep.
When you get to that point.
That's one reason why, you know, the attempt to push and drill, baby, drill and all that stuff isn't working that well, is because renewables are just cheaper. It's much cheaper to get solar at this point, to build a solar generator, than it is to generate with fossil fuels.
Even though the sort of incentives and rebates and things have pretty much dried up.
Yeah. There's still some incentives. There's still battery incentives. Mm. Wind power, of course, took a big hit, but they...
Why is that?
The administration canceled the federal funding and basically said, if you want your money back, let's give us some pipeline. So that's what happened in New York.
Quid pro quo, basically.
Kind of.
So, and that was the offshore wind projects?
Yep.
That was
the big ones.
Yeah.
The big ones that would make us exporters of energy to other regions. So,
and there was actually something that I heard that not only did they take the money away, but they, some of these companies that were mid-project, that were already building wind projects, they were paid off to stop those projects. That seems absolutely nuts to me.
I hadn't heard about the payoff, but a lot of them fled
like
the second this came through. It's like, what just happened, you know, that you invested that much? So I hadn't dived into whether or not there were payoffs, but that's an interesting prospect.
Yeah. It seems like that would be the exact opposite. You know, if you have a project already going, the funding's already in place, and then you take federal taxpayer money and you give it to these companies and say, now just stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
And we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
But just stop it.
Yeah. I haven't seen evidence of that one, but you know, it could be. And it's funny because something pretty similar happened back in the day when they were proposing the NED project. Berkshire Gas had a set of storage tanks that were permitted, and they were starting to build them in Pioneer Valley to give them extra, you know, storage for extra supply. Mm-hmm. And they had built two of the five. And then as soon as NED was proposed, it stopped. And they put a moratorium and said, we don't have enough capacity. You can't put in a new, you know, pizza oven. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough capacity. Mm-hmm. And they stopped their storage project.
Wow.
So there's always wrangling going on to try and reach for the bigger ring.
Yeah.
So
now if you're a homeowner in the Northeast and you're currently, obviously you'll always have a need for heating.
Yep.
Right. That's something that maybe the Southern states and some of the Midwest states may not have quite the same need that we have here in New England. They have other needs. They have, you know, more air conditioning needs and water needs.
We're
and
catching
like
up
that,
on
right?
the air conditioning
we
needs,
certainly
I'll tell
are.
You. Yeah.
But imagine now that you're a homeowner here and you're currently depending on one of those fossil fuels for, you know, just sustenance, for staying warm in the winter.
Yep.
It's natural gas or it's, you know, hopefully not coal still, but probably heating oil in the winter. What's a good strategy for you long term to say, I want to transition away from that, but I still want to stay warm?
MassSave has rebates for heat pumps. So you can get heat pumps and get, I think the current incentives are $10,000 back on rebate if you're moderate income, or $16,000, basically get it for free almost. Mm. You get $16,000 back if you're lower income. Mm-hmm. So definitely sign up for a home energy assessment and find out if you qualify for the whole home heat pump program. That's how I got them. Mm. I never would have been able to afford them otherwise. Yeah. And they work as air conditioning, too. Mm-hmm. They're excellent as air conditioning, and they're pretty good for heat. You can heat your entire home with them. It does get expensive in the winter.
Right. And that's the big question, right?
Yeah.
Is it how do you balance that? You want to be environmentally friendly, and at the same time, you don't want to go broke.
So right, right. And especially with the electricity prices being what they are now.
Right. And who knows where they're headed with the data centers, right? And that's something I know we want to talk about.
But the biggest long-term solution, and we're really hoping that we can get Berkshire Gas interested in it, and they're maybe agreeing to talk with us. Mm. We're in talks with them right now. And with their owner, the company that owns them, Avangrid, is networked geothermal.
Okay.
So that's geothermal, you know, where pipes go into the ground and they pick up that 55 degree heat.
Yeah.
And you only have to heat above 55 degrees at that point. You're not starting at minus 10 when it's really cold out, because the ground is constantly that temperature down to, you know, starting at about 6 feet.
Yeah.
So they put this in 6 to 15 feet down below, start with a nice base load of warm air, which actually in the summer is a nice base load of cool air. So it helps for air conditioning as well.
Right.
And those heat pumps that work with that system use far less because they starting with that base temperature of 55 degrees. And you can build a whole network. So this gives, you know, Avangrid, Berkshire Gas, a chance to stay in business as this transition away from gas happens. If they want to stay in business, that's the way to go. Eversource is actually doing that in Framingham. There's a pilot program that did several neighborhoods, and it's going so well that the second phase of the pilot program is doubling the size of it. It's cheaper for the customers and uses less electricity. It's amazing what it can do, and we're really hoping that they'll entertain the idea. It keeps the same workers in place because the folks who do the piping, guess what? You're still needed to maintain the piping.
Yeah.
And that also shares the heat between all the different places on that grid. Hmm. So if there are businesses that normally have to shed heat, they're supplying more heat into that system that can go into homes that need the heat. And it works the other way around in other seasons. So it's really a flexible way. It's an inexpensive way. It's less impactful to the environment as well. Hmm.
Sounds pretty innovative, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody likes to be, or some people do, but a lot of people don't like being on the bleeding cutting edge of new technologies, right?
Well, it's great that the Framingham
one. Because you don't
one.
Know how long it's going to work for or last for, or, you know, but if you've got an entire neighborhood or an entire community doing this together, that makes a big difference, because now it's like, okay, now we're actually working together on this.
Yep, they're doing it in Framingham. That's Eversource worked with an environmental group called HEAT, which is Home Efficiency and Energy Transition. I can't remember. It's H-E-E-T. Mm. But they worked together to get this pilot program going, and it's going great. It's been a few years now. And also, Avangrid, the owners of Berkshire Gas, are doing it in Ithaca, New York, and Rochester, New York. So they're not totally averse to the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we can get them to transition. If they can stay in power, that also means that people aren't shelling out for individual systems.
Right. Well, of course, the pendulum swings from a policy standpoint.
Yep.
And certainly we're on one of those swings right now where everything is going one way, and you kind of know which way the wind's blowing.
At least on the big federal and interstate level,
And a lot of that is influenced, obviously, as we talked about, the constitutional pipeline.
Yep.
There are things sort of out of our control. You can always protest the things that are happening, but in some ways, you know, they have a certain amount of power and they're able to push some things through regardless. And like you said, they were able to resurrect a 12 to 14 year old proposal without too much resistance.
It's not a done deal yet, though. No. And there's actually power to speaking up, even if the odds look really stacked.
Yeah. I think we've learned that over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
If you don't speak up, you can guarantee that they're going to roll over.
Exactly.
You.
So it costs nothing to speak up. And they actually started off the proceedings with just a protest period, which usually means they're going to hand out a certificate pretty quickly.
Huh.
And the protest raised enough questions that FERC is now asking for more information. we didn't know if they would hold any comment periods at all. But they opened with a protest, and since then they've asked for updated environmental info, updated cost info, and a new abutters list. That was one of our big comments, was this was proposed in 2012. How many people moved? How many people even know that there was a proposal back then?
Right, probably not.
They didn't have a chance to, you know, make their comments. So now they opened up a scoping hearing period so we could file scoping comments.
And I assume this is a movement that obviously if Berkshire Environmental Action Team is on the ground working on this, there are lots of other environmental groups all throughout this region that are also concerned about this and are pulling together.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch in New York as well. Stop the Pipeline started back up. They're working with the COGO. It's the Center for Organizing Against Coal and Gas or Gas and Oil. Center for Organizing Against Gas and Oil. I know the acronyms. I don't always know the words behind them. And Sane Energy, too, because they also revived a pipeline that would go from New Jersey into New York and end up on Rockaway Beach, basically. And that one got rushed right through with the same, just reissue our permits. Same sort of death happened where New York said, no, you'll hurt the water quality. And that one got right through. And part of that seem to have been the bargain for offshore wind.
Interesting.
That got its permit.
How it's all tied together somehow.
This one, it's not guaranteed that they're going to get that New York permit. They're trying to get that waiver through. And the next comment period coming up is the environmental assessment. So FERC, based on the scoping comments of what people were concerned about for the environment, they're doing an environmental assessment that's going to be released on August 21st. And after that, there'll be a comment period. And we will have on the BEAT website, we'll get into why that.
And which is the BEAT website again?
TheBEATnews.org. Okay. And it's BEAT for Berkshire Environmental Action Team. So TheBEATnews.org. We'll have comment guide up on there. We now have our pipeline guide on there as well.
So if you're interested in getting active and getting involved on this story or other stories that BEAT gets into, you can check that out at thebeatnews.org. Rose Wessel, my guest here this morning. We've reached that top of the hour. Rose, we're going to take our quick little break here, and we'll come back with more environmental news and updates and information. Fascinating stuff. We'll be right back after this. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sandrini.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Berkshire Running Foundation was created to advance and support the positive impact the running community has in the neighborhoods we live. In the past decade, we have been able to donate over $300,000 to dozens of nonprofit organizations here in Berkshire County through our races and free wellness programming. Please visit berkshirerun.org to support our mission to continue to have a social and economic impact on the Berkshires.
Hey, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Riley.
Do you like 90s alternative?
Do you like 2000s emo?
Are you tired of the same old predictable radio?
Tune in to Zennial Yearbook on WTVR. We're playing the best alternative songs from the 90s and early 2000s.
We're playing Green Day, Foo Fighters,
Blink-182, Weezer, and more My Chemical Romance than is required by law.
So tune your Walkman to 89.7 FM WTBR. Saturdays at 2 p.m. for all this and more.
It's Daniel's yearbook.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning on Friday, July 10th. You're waking up to about 68, 70 degrees outside. It's a little warm, but a nice morning, and we're going to have a nice day as well. Nice weekend, I hear. Rose Wessel is my guest here this morning. She will be coming back to talk more about environmental issues. Lots of stuff to cover here in the last few minutes of this show. But first, let's get to our weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly cloudy. Near steady temperature in the mid-60s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy. Humid with highs around 80. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Lows in the upper 50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right. There you go, your weather forecast, and enjoy your weekend out there, everybody. I think I'm going to. It's a nice weekend to have where you're not dealing with the rain, but also not dealing with extremely high temperatures, which we have had some of. Rose Wessel, thanks again for being here this morning from the BEAT, Berkshire Environmental Action Team, and No Fracked Gas in Mass. So along the lines of what we were just talking about, the Constitution Pipeline, there's a presentation coming up that we want to talk about.
Yeah, we're having a presentation at BEAT headquarters that's at 20 Chapel Street here in Pittsfield on August 15th at 2 o'clock. We're going to be talking about the Constitution Pipeline. So a lot of details on, you know, what it is, but also how it's going to impact New England, what the possible impacts are. And we are looking pretty heavily at data centers as well, but we don't know for sure exactly what customers they have because they're not filing any customers with FERC. So we're going to be talking about all those dynamics going on in detail. And we will have live interpretation in Spanish as well on.
Great. Yep. So that's August 15th. That's a what day?
That's a Saturday.
Saturday at 2 p.m.
Yep.
Over at BEAT headquarters there, which is just off of West Housatonic Street, if you go out in that neighborhood.
Yeah, Melbourne.
Melbourne Street. Yep.
Yep. Between there and the airport.
There you go.
Yep.
So that is a good presentation to go, and anyone is welcome to come. You don't have to be a BEAT member,
for example. Nope. We actually don't have like members. sign up members.
Okay.
We have a lot of followers, and we have a great core of volunteers, but anyone's welcome.
Great. All right. So let's move on to sort of the peak of the summer is where we're here. And the word peak will come up a couple times.
Yeah.
Because when the temperatures hit 90 or 95 degrees and the time hits around 5 p.m. in the afternoon, everybody gets home from work and their house is hot and they crank up those air conditioners. And that creates a peak situation, right, for the electric grid.
Yep.
So then what happens is the electric grid has to respond. And how do they respond to those peaks?
They respond by firing up a whole bunch of old power plants. The average age is 50 years old, so they're a lot less efficient, and they are generally fueled by gas. Some of them are still oil fueled.
Wow.
Some of the really old ones are jet fuel. They're kerosene.
Huh.
Yep. We used to have
big polluters, basically, is what they are.
Yep. We used to have two kerosene peakers in Berkshire County. One was right at the end of Doreen Street. You didn't see it through the underbrush there, but it was at the Eversource substation. And another one was in Lee. And we talked with the owners, and they were like, yeah, we shouldn't be doing this. And they shut them down, and they're dismantled. They're gone.
Wow. Yep. And did they put anything in their place?
They were so small, they didn't bother.
No.
But they also owned a big one in West Springfield. And that one, they're working on converting it over to battery power. It stalled a little bit because they were bought out by another company. But word is the other company is interested in pursuing it. So it will move forward. We don't know exactly when.
So there's a great potential there in replacing the peaker plants with battery storage, although there is some pushback from people about whether they want the battery storage sited near their houses, right?
And yeah.
That's really the key, is where you put the battery storage.
Yeah, I mean, right in the middle of a dense neighborhood is never a good place to put any energy infrastructure. Yeah.
And mainly for those, because right now the lithium ion batteries are still kind of a fire hazard in some ways, right?
Yes, a little bit. But the actual fire hazard has dropped by 98% since 2018. So it's a 0.2% chance per gigawatt of installed battery.
Okay.
So it's really low chance. Part of that is because the old batteries were lithium, nickel, manganese. That's what you have in your cell phone, you have in your laptop, and that can run. That can have thermal runaway and catch fire. The new ones are lithium iron phosphate. So the phosphate helps dampen the risk of fire. It doesn't heat up nearly as fast. And now there are a lot of regulations, especially from insurance, where we lack in regulations. Insurance companies have stepped in.
It's always the insurance companies.
Yeah, you know, it's all down to dollars and cents. So they are built with sensors, so they can tell if it's starting to heat up early on. They're built with fire suppression systems in those cabinets. They look like a bunch of big containers usually. And they're also spaced so that if one does catch fire, the others don't catch fire. So the risk has dropped significantly. And that's using that type of battery. Those are sort of the prevalent ones right now. There are a bunch of other technologies. There's sodium batteries that can't catch fire. It's not precious metals and stuff like that. Lithium is hard to mine, too. There's a lot of impact from the mining.
Sodium's much easier to obtain.
Sodium's much easier to obtain. And then the iron-based batteries are amazing. There's iron flow, which is basically iron, water, and salt. It can't catch fire, and they actually last longer. So a lithium battery will discharge in like 4 hours. They're iron flow batteries is what they're called, iron flow batteries. They can last up to 12 to 22 hours, depending on the configuration.
That's much better. And obviously, that's plenty to take care of if you're building them at a large scale. Those huge peaks that come through, right?
There's also iron air batteries. Those rust and unrust. I don't know how they figured it out. It's folks from MIT, so they figured it out. But they charge and discharge by rusting and unrusting, and totally non-toxic, non-flammable, and those can store up to 10 days of power. So that's really great for winter peaks when, you know, gas is competing with electric generation for, you know, whatever gas is left. They can actually supply power for winter peaks.
And so obviously all these new technologies and new formulations of batteries and things are, you know, they start out being sort of experimental, then they go into production, the price drops eventually, and it becomes something that people and companies can use to make the old technology, you know, either obsolete or, if not obsolete, not worth pursuing anymore, right?
Yep.
And so is that where we're headed? And how long do you think it'll take before we see that progression where those technologies are sort of the default of what we would want to use instead of the peaker plants? For instance, a Pittsfield generating plant is one of those old peaker plants. It's located right there in the middle of Pittsfield.
They're starting to, the technologies that I just talked about are starting to transition out of pilot and into manufacturing. They still welcome pilots to show, you know, give a little more examples of different scenarios where they work, but they're also opening up to commercial development. Form Energy, the iron air batteries, is actually working with Google on a data center that's trying to go with renewables and a lot of battery storage. So that's one of the first really big applications of Form Energy batteries.
Right. And of course, when we're talking about power and delivery and usage, it's a lot like the economy. It's supply and it's demand, right?
Yeah.
So we have the supply of electricity, where it comes from. It comes from all these different places. It comes from some fossil fuels. It's increasingly coming from renewables. But then there's the demand side. And I think of the idea of everyone transitioning from the old incandescent bulbs, which used, you know, 100 watts of power, down to an LED bulb that uses 5 watts of power or 9 watts of power to get the same light.
Yep.
That was a big transition that we made, but that dropped the demand side, right? So are there things that people can do to drop their demand during those peak times that they can still live with, right? You get home and you're like, I need cool air. I can't stay in. Mayor Mamdani from New York City famously said, keep your thermostats at 78. I don't know if people can do that in a hot summer.
And a lot of it, there are a lot of folks that need it a little cooler for their health,
too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, if you definitely need it for your health, you want to keep it as cool as you can, or as warm as you can stand it.
Yeah.
But the idea is to conserve between 5 and 8 p.m. So don't do anything big between 5 and 8 p.m. on a peak day.
Yeah.
Don't run your washer. Mm. Don't run your dishwasher.
Yeah.
Don't charge your car.
Mm-hmm.
Delay it for a few hours.
So prioritize. If you've got to run the air conditioner, maybe delay those other things.
Yep. And also, you can pre-cool your house during the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever look at a graph of the grid during the day, you'll see it drops all the way to the bottom in the middle of the day. That's all that solar that we've been building. So the demand on the grid drops because it's coming from all that solar.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time that you want to pre-cool your house, make it nice and cool. And then when it gets to 5 o'clock, turn your thermostat up to whatever temperature you can handle.
Yeah.
You're starting out from a cooler place. It'll take a while before you start to notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be past the peak by then and you can cool back down
again.
So
just some ordinary techniques, some common sense things you can do, right?
Yep.
The other thing that people have done throughout the ages is pull your shades. You know, don't let the sun cook the inside of your house during the day. Keep it dark, keep it cool if you can.
We do that at my house. I had my house built for solar gain. And you better believe in the morning we close the eastern windows. You know, we close the curtains. And then the south in the middle of the day, and then we can open it back up. But when it's going to be really hot, block that sun from coming in. It helps it stay cool.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you can use fans instead of AC, it's a much less intensive way to go.
Yep.
If you have an electric car, schedule your charging for like 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. So that you're charging during that time when there's so little demand on the grid that you're not making anything fire up.
Yeah. Are people's solar installations in their home and maybe battery along with that, is that starting to make a difference on some of these peak times? Have we seen that change over the past 10 years or so?
Yeah, that's actually a big part of the dip in the grid.
Interesting.
And it
not,
shows
not just the big industrial solar farms, but the residential solar.
Yep. I mean, it's still a drop in the bucket compared to a huge installation, but all those drops in the bucket are starting to add up to where the grid dips down to base, I mean, really low base in the middle of the day.
Right.
And storage helps as well because you can store up for the peak. You can control when that battery's going to discharge as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you can switch your house off of grid use to battery use during the peak, so you're not putting any pressure on the grid.
Yeah. That seems pretty smart, but it's a big change for people who are used to just flicking a switch and having something work and having it always be there. You have to think. You have to do some things to make that work.
And you have to do a little bit of research, but there are programs, and it's good to look into, again, MassSave for the heat pumps. Look into connected solutions as well. That's where your battery can help supply power to the grid if you want it to.
Mm. And you mean the car battery? Or just the battery?
Just the house battery, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Because there was some talk also about potentially using car batteries for that. I don't know if that ever caught.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah, I don't think that's active.
Not yet, yeah.
I wish Jane was here. our old founder, Jane, she just got, she's starting to get checks now for not charging during certain times.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's for supplying power to the grid. I'd have to check in again.
I wonder if that has something to do with the rollout of the smart meters. Because a lot of people in this area have just recently gotten those this year.
Yep, that's what makes a lot of things possible.
Yeah.
With smart meters, they actually ran a test program in Snohomish County in Washington for winter peak to try and stop, reduce demand during winter peak. And anyone that was fully automated, where the thermostat automatically turned, to favor saving energy, and appliances stalled and charging stalled automatically, they shaved 30% of energy use off of the peak.
That's not nothing.
Yeah. That's a whole bunch of power plants not starting up.
Right, right. And a whole lot of savings for people, too. So, there's an incentive for doing that.
And if you live in Allendale and Pittsfield Generating doesn't start up, that's a good day.
Yeah, definitely a good day.
Yeah.
Not having to breathe that in.
And feel the vibration and hear the noise.
Right.
So, yeah.
Rose Wessel, my guest here, if you're just joining us on Morning Drive, we're talking about, right now we're on the peak energy usage, but we want to get a couple of more subjects in here before we're done for the day. Rose, tell us about sludge.
Sludge. Oh, my. It turns out that sludge, that's solid waste from solid waste management companies, those get spread onto fields.
Now, this is sludge from water treatment plants.
Yeah.
So this is the hard solid. This is the stuff that you want to go away from your house. This is the stuff that ends up the solid at the end of the day.
And, you spread manure.
This is going on plants. This is going on things.
This is going on farmers' fields.
And this has been going on for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And the trouble with municipal solid waste that comes out of that water treatment plant is there's pharmaceuticals, there's chemicals, and there's PFAS.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part. So PFAS that was spread, there's a case in Maine where it was spread, and they can never spread it again, and there will still be PFAS. It's called a forever chemical for a reason.
Yep.
It doesn't break down.
Yeah.
So once that stuff is spread,
it comes back into your food supply, it's back into your body, and then it never leaves.
I was shocked to learn that it actually gets into the vegetables. They can test the produce that's grown on those fields and find PFAS.
Mm.
So right now, I think there's a minimum allowable amount according to regulations in the state. There shouldn't be any allowable amount.
Mm.
So BEAT has a campaign on sludge. And Williamstown actually passed the state's first municipal ban on applying sewage sludge on agricultural fields.
Yeah, that was just a month ago.
Yeah. Right?
Back at their annual town meeting.
Yeah, great for them for organizing that and getting it passed. So now there's that precedent. If you're concerned about it in your town, especially if you're a very agricultural town, you might want to have a look at what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe get the fields tested, see if it's there.
Well, it's certainly one of those things we never think about, right? Once we know that our wastewater is being treated and taken away and done, we don't really think, okay, what happens to this stuff?
Yeah. So, and see if you can pass a ban in your town.
Hmm. Of using the sludge for
agricultural world.
Agricultural.
Yep.
Very interesting. We wanted to talk about stocked fish.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that? So I think we did talk about this at one other interview here on Morning Drive about how a lot of the fish that are stocked for recreational purposes, essentially in lakes and rivers, are not native to those areas. And they can actually cause problems when you're introducing non-native species.
Yep. They can compete with the native species. Mm. And also the sheer volume of fish that they stock is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They expect a fair amount of them to die. And that ends up polluting the waterway as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working to, we want to see the funding for that go to habitat restoration, science-based conservation, and hands-on community-based education. and try and stop the, or not stop the process of stalking, but at least put limits on it, maybe stop it. So a conversation needs to be had about how that needs to proceed.
Interesting.
Yep.
Well, as we found out at Pontusic Lake, the fishing population is a very vocal and very involved group of people. They want to preserve their right to fish.
And it doesn't impinge the right to fish.
No.
It just changes how we handle stocked fish.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. And some other events coming up for BEAT, Berkshire Environmental Action Team. You should probably mention the merger of the websites.
Yeah. No Frack Gas and Mass has started out as our own program. We started out separate, although we were working with BEAT right from the start as well, collaborating on presentations. And we slowly got folded in as a program of BEAT. And we've been a program of BEAT for over 10 years at this point, I think. Or close to 10 years. But we've always maintained a separate website because that's how it started. And separate social media and all that stuff. We're slowly merging the two. So nofrackgasandmass.com is still there. You can still find stuff, but we're not keeping it up as much. And so far, the pipeline information has switched over to the beatnews.org. You want to look under campaigns and you'll see pipelines and fossil fuel infrastructure there. And Brittany, the deputy director, has been doing a great job. She made a nice side thing with all the action items and tabs where you can see what's happening with each of the proposed pipelines.
All right. So if you're still concerned about following all that information, you keep it keep track of it, but it's moving over to the beatnews.org. Right. So that's a kind of an important thing. You've got a couple of special events coming up. One at Chesterwood, I see. On July 24th. What's that?
July 24th. It's Moth Night. And that is a fun.
Do I have to bring my own moth?
You do not have to bring your own moth. You don't even have to bring your
own. Do I have to dress as a moth?
No. Although that would be fun. So anyone who's inclined to dress as a moth, please do. There's all kinds of inflatable costumes these days. So, but yeah, it's a fun night. Basically, they put up sheets and shine lights on them and do surveys of the moths that are attracted to the light.
Nice.
And the presenter for it is really wonderful. He's just a joy to participate with. It is waitlist only at this point. The registration is full, but if you want to get a chance to be there, join the waitlist, and if openings happen, you can get in.
Great. So that's at Chesterwood.
Yep.
On the 24th of July. Then there's the Housatonic River Cleanup, something that happens every year, right? At least once a year?
A few times a year in the summer, several times in the summer. So the next one is July 25th. Registration is required. And it's going into the Housatonic River and pulling out all the stuff that's there. And there's this last time, there were a lot of shopping carts, which is a perennial problem.
So this is a continual problem, right?
Yeah.
This is not something where we're going back to the Housatonic because there was so much there, we're continuing to take it out. There's just more stuff
that keeps going in. Yeah. There's a lot less than there was when it first started, but they pulled a bunch of mattresses out.
Mattresses must be the absolute worst to pull out of a river.
They're heavy, they're soaked, and all that silt and whatever else gets in there. It's awful.
Why do people throw mattresses in the river?
Why do people throw anything in the river?
Things
live in the river. Yeah. Don't do that. That's their home. But one year they found an ATM.
Empty, I'm assuming.
Yeah, no cash, but the ATM was actually in the river. So if you're ever going somewhere along the river and you see piles of stuff, that's because it's been pulled out. It's not people dumping. Sometimes people see and go, who dumped all this stuff next to the river? It's like, no, we're just waiting for our people to come haul it away. So,
And what do you do with it after you pull it out of the river?
I'm not sure. There is a waste company that comes and gets the stuff. So
that's good.
Yeah.
And then you have a Berkshire Biodiversity Day, and that's happening in September?
Yep. That's going September 19th through 20th. It's 24 hours, and people do surveys to see what species they can find and identify them. And that's always a huge participation as well, and just a lot of fun. I did mine remotely one time up on my hill and found that all the stuff that was going on, that was in the spring that year, and I found that all the stuff that was going on down in Berkshire County wasn't happening up on the hill in Cummington yet where I was.
Wow.
I was just that much later. But this time it's in September, so there should be a lot to find.
Great. And, of course, we talked about the Constitution Pipeline. You're going to have the presentation on August 15th at the Beat Center, which is over on, what? Tell me again the address.
20 Chapel.
There you go, 20 Chapel. And that's on August 15th. So
yep,
all
free, open to the
come.
Public,
right.
And Spanish interpretation.
Well, that's excellent. Rose, I think we packed a lot in this hour. Do you have anything else in the last 30 seconds?
Yeah, real quick. It's still upcoming, but we're starting a community chest, giving out small grants to people who have barriers who have repairs that need to be done to their home to be able to access MassSave.
Oh, great.
So if you ever got an evaluation and they said you can't do that until you fix this, if it's under $4,000 or so, we might be able to help.
Well, that's great. And if you want more information about that, you can contact Beat at
TheBeatNews.org, B-E-A-T, news.org.
Rose Wessel, thanks for being here this morning. Always great to talk to you. We'll have you on again.
All right, thanks.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Morning Drive will return on Monday with Brian. Take care, everybody.
Drive where you